Hey folks, before getting into today's episode, we're excited to announce that we've launched a Patreon page. Yes! So, a few listeners have asked how they can donate to the show on a recurring basis, and now there's a way. So, if you're unfamiliar with Patreon, it's kind of like a GoFundMe slash Kickstarter mashup. We provide different donation levels in exchange for different perks and rewards, including our private Facebook group, access to our video chats, priority status in our question queue, the opportunity to be on the show, and more. So, why are we doing this?
Well, we're trying to grow the show, but we're tapped on resources. There's questions we're not getting to, guides and tools we're not creating, webinars we're not hosting, and people we're not reaching because we're at max capacity. Any funds we receive will be used for services or tools that free up our time to create more great content that helps you and others. And you can read more about this on the Patreon page by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/patron. But if you're a drinker, it's also spelled like Patron. You'll also find an amateur-esque video of us. Hope you enjoy.
Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we chop it up about work and money for millennials with the hope we don't leave you saying, "The hell was that?"
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances, all words.
And if you've been enjoying the show, drop by and hit us with the 5 stars on iTunes. If you don't know how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review. It helps us stay visible in the rankings, which means we reach more people.
And if we reach more people, we help more people. Y'all know how it goes.
Indeed, friend, indeed. So today we're joined by another dope guest. She started from the blog, now she's here, like really here, on the cover of magazines and riding clean in car commercials. Was just watching that again before we jumped on. She's an author, speaker, entrepreneur, certified financial education instructor, and the woman behind MyFab Finance, Tanya Rapley. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. That's such an awesome intro. Man, I like that.
Yeah, you know what? It's like I practice it and then I still messed up part of it. It's always like that though. I got to leave it in.
Like riding clean. I like that.
That's what it was. So, I gave a little bit of an intro there, but if you could fill in any gaps with any other awesomeness you'd like to add for the people about your background.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a Charlotte, North Carolina native. I was born to two military veterans. So my mother and father both are currently retired from the military. I actually didn't think that I was going to get into personal finance because I hated math so much growing up. But I ended up... I worked at nonprofits for the bulk of my career. I have a bachelor's in public administration and a master's in urban policy administration. And so I thought I was going to go the policy route. And then MyFab Finance just happened out of necessity. I had to improve my own financial situation. And I started to look around. I was like, hey, there aren't any people that I really identify with in this space. And let me just go ahead and put my spin on financial education, because at that point, everybody was giving me Susie Orman books. And I was like, okay, we need some Black lady books. And so that's how MyFab Finance started. And now I run it full time. Actually just bought into a fintech startup, Foam. So I'm a co-founder now as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but it's been a wonderful journey. And it's, you know, people say like, oh, it's your season when the commercial happened and everything. I'm like, no, actually, I'm just getting started. So looking forward.
Dope. So MyFab Finance, it sounds glamorous, but we know talking about money isn't always the sexiest thing out there unless you're balling. So can you tell people a little bit more about kind of what the site is about and kind of what the mission is there?
Yeah. So the site is about, my mission at MyFab Finance is to help millennials break the cycle of living paycheck to paycheck, particularly women, while remaining fabulous while doing it, so that they can eventually do more of what they love. Because one thing I found is so many people don't know what it is that they love. And that's one of the things that money for most of us affords us the opportunity to figure that out. But if you're living paycheck to paycheck and struggling, then you don't even have the opportunity to find out, you know, what you're passionate about and what you enjoy doing on this earth. And so, but I also believe in being fabulous. I don't do deprivation. And I think that's another misconception, is that you have to put on like these man suits or, you know, thrift or be a freaking shopper in order to be financially responsible. And I just wanted to show from the other vein, one of the things I talk about is frugal doesn't equal frumpy. And that just because you have your money together and you're focused on getting your money together doesn't mean that you have to look a certain way or look discounted.
So I was going to ask in your head. So what does a man suit look like? Is it like striped? Does it have like muscles built into it? Is that include one of those pairs of glasses with the mustache on it?
A man suit. Yeah. I mean, without being offensive to like the future first lady and the future president of this country, Hillary Clinton is, you know, she kind of wears the mannish suit. And I think that a lot, you know, Susie Orman, I think a lot of people think that that's what financial responsibility as a woman looks like, because we've accepted Susie Orman as our role model for financial responsibility when it comes to women. And I think in general, I think only now is that image and that perception beginning to shift with, you know, Patrice Washington, Marsha, the finance bar, Tiffany Budgetista, myself, Lynette Calfani Fox. I think that people are finally starting to accept a different vision of what financial responsibility looks like on women. But even when I started with MyFabFinance, you know, I felt like I had to show up at all my speaking engagements with a button down white shirt and, you know, a pencil skirt or something of that nature, when it's like I can be funky and have my finances together.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting on this side, having not really thought too much about personal finance and probably till the past couple of years here, because I've realized there are some things that I want to do in life. And I know it's the same thing with Marcus. And it's kind of like, all right, we really need to start getting this stuff together. And initially, when we first started the podcast, we were supposed to talk about money and career advice. Then we started talking about other things. And it's kind of like life where you'll start something and then you start getting distracted. You know, so how have you kind of been able to stay focused, you know, in terms of getting your money together?
Yeah. Distractions happen, and I'd be lying if I said that they didn't. I mean, even most recently, our honeymoon was a huge financial distraction for us. And we kind of got off track of our goals just slightly, and we had to retweak a few things. So it does happen. And I don't want some, I think the mistake that a lot of people make is that when they fall off the wagon, you know, you start out committed and then you fall off the wagon. And then you just quit. And that's not it. You have to retweak, recalibrate, and get back on. So just that, just figuring out what went wrong and how do I prevent this going forward? Is there anything that I can do to address my lack of financial focus? And if not, you know, just what can you do to fix it and ensure it doesn't happen going forward? Because it happens even to the best of us. It really does.
Yeah, I think sometimes people don't think it happens to the experts or the folks who they look to as experts. They're like, they have it all together. They have it all figured out. They're not making these mistakes anymore. But like you said, it happens to everyone. Even the best have their splurge moments, their moments of weakness where they maybe buy something they shouldn't. It's just natural.
It's natural. I mean, we live in a society where we're continuously being marketed to, and you know, in all sorts of ways now, even the slightest of marketing. And so it's just really, I would say, unreasonable to assume that not one person doesn't deal with, you know, a splurge purchase or making a purchase that might be against their financial interest. Now, you can minimize how much, you know, like, I'm not going out and buying a house that I know I shouldn't buy, like here in New York City, knowing how expensive it is to maintain these older properties and so forth. I'm not, you know, but it might be, you know, I was in Target and I picked up that bronzer. Instead of, you know, just being like, you know what, let me go home and apply this to, you know, my student loan balance. So
yeah. So what's your earliest money memory?
My earliest money memory was a pair of Nikes that I bought for myself. So growing up, I liked boy shoes. My mom used to call them boy shoes because I was slightly a tomboy, and so she refused to buy me boy shoes. And I saved my money from like my birthday gifts and everything else. And I went in and bought my first pair of boy shoes. I think they were $65. So that's my first money memory, spending money.
So were your parents kind of good with the finances and having those types of conversations in the household? Or was it things that you kind of learned later on through trial and error?
Well, you know, in military families, it's slightly different because it's stable for the most part. You know, you don't have to worry about your parents losing their job in the military. Like if it happens, it's going to happen. They don't go into the office that day and like, oh, we're doing layoffs. And so as a result, my parents kind of had this security that I wouldn't have because I didn't go into the military. And so we didn't talk about investment or saving for retirement because my parents have a retirement from the military. They did have money discussions with me, not necessarily about savings, but about credit. Credit was one of those things that my parents, they, you know, they're wonderful people. They made a lot of wonderful and fantastic financial decisions and in a great financial place. But my parents, they buy things. And so like my mom growing up, she, you know, it wasn't a, it was un, not unusual for her to get a new car every 2 to 3 years. And because of that, you need credit. And so my parents are really big on credit. And as a result, I graduated from, I went to college with really good credit. I had the really good credit throughout college, but I wasn't saving money. So that was one of the conversations that we weren't having, what we weren't talking about, saving money. Turns out down the line, when I ended up giving up a scholarship and going to college in Florida, I thought I had saved for everything, like my new apartment and everything. And then I showed up first day of class and I'm like, oh, actually, we need you to go to the office because you need to pay $1,200 if you want to stay enrolled, or you're going to lose your out-of-state tuition waiver and you have to sit out the semester.
And I
called my mom. I was like, Mom, I don't know what I'm going to do. And she was like, mm-hmm. Because at that point, I had told her I didn't need anything from her because she didn't want me to go.
I could see the look on her face.
Yeah. So I was like, I don't need anything from you. Then I got there. That happened. And I had to call her immediately because I needed something from her. And she called me back, was like, the money's in your account. Go ahead and go down there and pay it. And that's when I realized, oh, she saves. I didn't realize she saved money. And now I know my mom is like, she saves really well. So now we talk about it. But growing up, it's not something we discussed.
Huh. Okay. So you started with a music blog and then you worked at a nonprofit.
Where did you find out about this music blog at? That is so, yeah.
We do our research a little bit.
Hey, you know, it's all part of the story. It's all part of the journey, as people like to say. So you started with a music blog, then you worked at a nonprofit, then you started My Fab Finance. And then if I got this right in the least stalkerish way possible, you eventually peaced out from the day gig. So can you talk a little bit about those moves and kind of the reasons behind those transitions and kind of that point where you were like, all right, like this is it. It's time for me to go off and do my own thing.
Yeah, the music blog, I feel like it was so necessary to this journey because for one, I learned what not to do with blogging. I moved to New York City with that blog. The blog was the Irrigasm, and the purpose of it was to highlight artists that I felt weren't getting the mainstream love that they deserve. So like that was before Kendrick Lamar really popped, a few other artists as well. And I moved to New York to do that because I realized that people weren't coming to North Carolina. Like when you make your, you know, you're doing your U.S. tour or you're coming to the United States for the first time, North Carolina is not exactly the place on the map. So I wanted to get to New York so that I can meet these artists in person and highlight them and attend their shows. The Airgasm went really well, and then I had a few transitions in my personal life, and I felt like it no longer was aligned with my personal goals. And so I closed that, ended up going back to nonprofit. And it was at that nonprofit I also saw what happened when you allowed life to happen to you versus when you planned, because I was working with low-income women. Well, everyone wasn't low-income. Some of the women were doing exceptionally well, and these were the women who were taking trips to China in their retirement, and then others weren't doing that well. And these were women who, after they received their Social Security, they were down in the subway begging because they didn't have enough money to make ends meet. And I was like, I want to be the woman who's traveling to China in my retirement. And so that's when I said, you know, I need to get my financial life together. And My Fab Finance was born out of that. And because of the music blog that I had started 4 or 5 years prior, I understood how to navigate blogging. And so it wasn't as challenging for me to get it set up. And I understood what I didn't do properly to monetize it. And so I worked on actually making My Fab Finance a sustainable business. And so that's been the journey. And, you know, a lot of us, sometimes we're doing things that we don't understand how it serves us. Mm-hmm. But now in retrospect, like the Irrigasm was pre My Fab Finance. It was what gave birth to My Fab Finance because I just understand how to move differently in the space as a result.
So I have a couple of comments. First of all, I have to defend potential first lady. You know, I thought the cream on the inside, cream on the outside, pants suit. She rocked at both functions, I think at the Democratic convention and the final day. Like I thought it was pretty player, you know, had like 6 Steve Harvey buttons on it. So just in defense.
Cream on the inside.
And then,
so I'm from the South. I hear everything. It's like music. Exactly. I process everything like that.
Yeah, I dropped that for the people. I dropped that. So some people would have got that, but you know, so you said something in the beginning. I definitely want to echo again. I think that you agree with is, I think people hear, you know, with MyFi Finance, and then when I wrote the book, and then people are like, you must be great at math. And I think people get intimidated by that. So they think personal finance, I'm not good at math, and they use it as a reason not to move forward. So I'm not good at math at all. I'm not even particularly good. Like, you know, I work at a 10 Klee 82 plus calculator like anybody else, but I'm not like some math guru. So can you talk about how you kind of see that as two different, if you agree, functions and means? Because I think it's more about, you know, self-accountability.
Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, financial responsibility, financial success is really doing what you said you would do with your money and spending less than you save. That is the formula. Spending less money than you actually bring in so that you can save that money and invest it so you don't get behind the curveball. I mean, it's not ideally you would grow your money, and that's another part of the component. I think that's where you add a little more math into the situation to understand compound interest and so forth. But it really is just about saving your money and not spending everything that you get and not overextending yourself. That is not about mathematics. That is about, as you said, that self-control and responsibility and being responsible when it comes to your financial situation. So yeah, I think it's an excuse that a lot of people use, because it's not like you're over here calculating formulas when it comes to how much money am I going to put into my savings account. It's a percentage, or it's a certain flat amount that you're going to put in weekly. It's addition and subtraction, basically. And so that is, it's an excuse that I think a lot of people have to let go of, because I sucked at math growing up. Like, when, if my math teachers were to see me as a financial educator now having the misconception that you have to be good at math, they'd be like, what? She's doing what? I mean, even in college, like in my freshman year and my sophomore year, I took both my math classes over because I got like a D the first time around, and I ended up taking them over. And wow. So math is something that I've always had to just buckle down and focus on. And it's one of those things when you're really good at a lot of things, because I'm a Gemini and I'm really good at a lot of things. So I think I underestimate how much effort it takes me to be good at math. Everything else I have A's in, and then my math class is like, damn, what happened? You got a D. And I take it over and I get an A. And so I think I really have to focus on math and mathematic related functions. But with personal finance, it's not that challenging. And that was another reason I wanted to get into personal finance, is because I feel like when you have a finance background, you speak to people from that finance background. You don't speak to them in terms that are relatable in a way that they can understand. And that was another thing about MyFab Finance. I wanted to speak to people and about finance in a way that they would be able to understand.
Mm. Now, I was going to say, there's one test. There's only one standardized test that I've ever walked out of in my life, and it was the SAT 2 math. It's because I'm the same way, and that actually not being good in math crushed my dreams of engineering. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be an engineer. I'm going to make these bucks. And then I took that SAT 2 math, and I was like, nah, bro, this ain't for me. And that dream was quickly crushed. I did not go back to retake it and get the A. I didn't have that level of ambition, but I definitely know where you're coming from. And I think that underscores the point for people that, look, you do not need to be a math expert to get your money in order.
No, absolutely not. And I started out college wanting to be a dentist. And then I looked at the pre-med track, the pre-dentistry track. I was like, oh, no, no.
I didn't even know.
What requires the least amount of math?
I'm literally just now finding out about this SAT. I can't even say it. Like, it obviously didn't exist in whatever plan that I was on. I guess I wasn't in the AP route. So I'm going to have to Google that. I think you made it up.
And that's another thing. That's another thing is that I think that standardized tests in general or these benchmarkers for intelligence or brilliance tend to throw a lot of people off track. And that's something important to think about your professional goals and going forth. I think that very early on, they tell us we're not good at things because we don't excel at the standardized tests. And you have to release that narrative as an adult, because I know so many people who outdid me on the SATs that I'm outdoing in life. Yeah. And that's in all humility. And so I want people have to let that go. And I think that there might be some people who are listening to this, people who I know, they're like, well, I can't do that. I didn't do good at it in school and so and so and so, and I wasn't performing well in the test. Well, let that go, because that is not the determining factor in how well you do as an adult.
Nah, definitely not. I can actually think of someone when I was in high school, and I want to say they got like a 1560 on their SAT or something. So it was something insane where everyone was like, oh, this person is going to go on and be the president. They dropped out after the first semester. Like, mm-hmm. they didn't even make it through their first semester of school because, you know, you can, if you take the right course, you can learn to master an exam or master a system. But if you don't have that work ethic, mm-hmm. that raw innate talent or being able to master that one task, that's not going to get you through some of the harder stuff that comes at you.
Work ethic is everything. And even when it comes to your finances, you know, diligence and responsibility is everything.
Yeah.
It's interesting you say as far as keeping it simple. And I think we should emphasize that for folks because I kind of got out of debt pretty much through trial and error and just frustration and, you know, a lot of Google searches and Excel spreadsheets. But so now I'm kind of going back. I'm like, man, I want to learn everything there is to know about credit cards so I can teach other people. It has to be complex and complicated. I need to like roll out a whiteboard and fill it up. And they're like scribbling behind me. And so I reached out to some people and y'all, I think some of y'all might be aware of this. And I was like, hey, you know, where should I go to learn all there is to know about credit cards? And basically the response was pay them off every month. And I'm like, it's got to be more complicated than that.
No, pay them. Pay them and keep the balance below 30%.
Yeah. And then when people ask me, like, what's the, you know, the secret to getting out of debt or what, you know, what's the, and I'm like, the secret to getting out of debt is to never get in debt. That's actually the lesson I wish I could teach people is like, it avoid debt if at all possible. But mm-hmm. if you do fall on the other side, then yes, you could start listening to these advices that we impart.
Now, Tanya, mm-hmm. when you first went to school, did you get one of those credit cards freshman year where as soon as you walk on campus, they're like, hey, sign up, here's your Frisbee?
Listen, I didn't even make it to campus before I got my first credit card. As soon as I turned 18, because my birthday is in June, they sent me a little Visa. I don't even know if they have that product anymore. They sent it to me and I had racked up credit card debt before I even walked on campus because I had a trip to Miami the month before I went to college. And so, of course, I had to go buy like all my gear for freshman year from Miami. And I maxed out that card by August, which is when school starts. And the thing that saved me is that I wasn't smart enough to change the address to my school address. And so my mom got the credit card statement. And if anybody has that mother who's like, your mail came to my house, it's my mail. And she opened it and she was like, what? You have a credit card? Because my parents are really big on credit. So my mom was like, who do you think you are?
Wait. They didn't know? Oh, wow.
No, they didn't know. They did not know. That's how my mom found out is that I had been living at home up until that point. So I was like running out, getting the mail to make sure she didn't see it. But I was at college. And so I remember she called me and I know my mom is going to call me about like, I know it's a problem when she calls me like three times consecutively. And so I answered, I was like, hello. She's like, so who do you think you are? I was like, what? Excuse me? And she's like, so you eating at Red Lobster? Because I was eating at Red Lobster in college. And she's like, so what we're going to do is close this immediately and I'm going to pay it off. I think the balance is like $350. Mm. The credit limit was $300.
Okay.
And so it was simple. She wiped it out with one payment, but it was just the fact that having a credit card without any means to pay for it. I didn't have a job, that first month. I didn't have any means to pay for that credit card bill. I essentially saw it as free money. So I was that person. My mom paid it off. And as a result of her paying it off, I had great credit by the time I was ready to move to Miami to the point where I financed my first car. I financed the laptop that I needed to go and I was financing stuff. I still hadn't learned how to save for my big purchases yet.
Okay. So I think that's a good segue. What was either the breaking point or the starting point? I don't know what point you want to see it as. I don't know. Not everybody has to reach rock bottom. So yeah, when did you make the change? When did you
Tanya has to reach rock bottom most of the time. Like I just learn hard. I fail hard and learn hard.
I didn't want to assume.
So rock bottom when it came to my credit was that I got into a financially abusive relationship. So it was physically, emotionally, and financially abusive. And my abuser took advantage of my good financial standing and like, used it to run like PayPal scams. I was the only person paying the bills in the house. I was the only person able to take out things in my name because his credit was shot. And so all the utilities were my name, all the leases, the leases were my name. We ended up terminating two leases. And so that went on my credit report. And that was really rock bottom. My credit was in shambles. Like, I had fallen behind. But prior to that, I had credit cards, but I hadn't fallen behind on them. But because I was so financially stressed from carrying the burden of a grown man and myself, I wasn't paying my credit cards. I didn't have any money in savings because everything was just going to that. And then he started stealing money from me. So the money that I actually was using to pay for our overhead was being taken. And so it was just a really terrible financial situation. And that happened my final year in college. And after I graduated, I was like, you know, I'm putting that all that behind me, including dealing with it. So I just brushed it under a rug and went on about my life, avoiding credit, avoiding anything that required me to apply for credit. So that meant renting an apartment from a family member versus going the traditional route. When I moved to New York City, becoming a roommate instead of renting my own apartment. And I just got tired of avoiding my finances. I really got tired of just living life under the financial radar and trying to find every way to skirt the fact that my finances were actually in shambles and looking like I had it all together instead of actually having it together. And that in the combination of working with low-income women gave birth to my Fab Finance.
Now, this idea of financial abuse, I think it's really interesting, and I heard you speak about it on another show, and because it's something that I never really thought about that before. I think when most people think about abuse, they think of physical, they think of verbal, they even think of emotional, and maybe financial abuse encompasses all of those things. But can you talk more about what that may look like for people? Because there are some people who may be being financially abused and they don't even realize it.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of people who are probably being financially abused and don't realize it. It manifests itself differently. And I think that's the thing with abuse. Abuse is the continued exertion of power to maintain control. So whether that is mental abuse where they're continuously, you know, maintaining control over your thinking and your thinking processes by making you feel inadequate, or making you feel like you're crazy, physical abuse, you know, kind of beating you into submission.
Financially,
not just them, you know, it's a lot of people. Pastors have been found to abuse their wives. You know, it happens in the faith-based community. So abuse is something that doesn't have a face. And I think that's the issue is that a lot of people assume that financial abuse or physical abuse looks a certain way and it doesn't. So my situation where I was financially stressed and I was forced to take on the burden of the household because of who I am. My parents taught me to do everything with integrity. So I'm not letting the bills fall behind. And my abuser saw that. I was like, oh, okay, well, I can keep her financially broke so she can't leave because of her desire to just pay bills on time and like be financially, like, uphold her obligations. But other people, it is not allowing you to work. So I'm one of the things that I've done is went back and learned how to work with survivors because I realized it's something I want to integrate into my work. And I've met women where they won't allow them to get a job. And so that they're not able to hold any assets in their name. So whereas everything was in my name, there are some people who don't have anything to their name and their abuser intentionally keeps them in that position. Affecting your earning opportunities. So, you know, intentionally sabotaging your job so that you cannot keep a job. Or I even heard of one case where a woman, she was getting her master's degree and the abuser destroyed her electronic version and her physical copy, her thesis. And so like everything that she worked towards her entire educational career was destroyed. So it affects people differently. I've seen people where, you know, they make you live in the house that their mother owns. And so like, well, every time you turn around, they remind you, well, this ain't your house and I can put you out on the corner at any given time. You don't own anything. I own you. You know, so it so many different layers and so many different types of scenarios. But it is when it all goes back to the intentional use of power to control someone and that continued pattern. So it might one time might not be abuse, but if there's a continued pattern of that, then yes, when you look at like, this might be an abusive situation.
You know, it's crazy because I'm thinking of this in the context of relationships or like with whoever your partner is, but then you said something and I'm like, oh, it could be a parent. It could be a relative. It doesn't just have to be someone that you're dating or in a relationship. It could just be people who are in your household or are in your extended family. It could even be friends.
Abuse doesn't only take place in romantic relationships, and that's another misconception people have. Abuse can be in parental, parent-child situations from the parent or from the child. It can be in work relationships. So like one of my relationships, I was like, this is abusive. I just want y'all to know that this is abusive. That was my last job before I went on to the job that allowed me to do my Fab Finance. But it was like my boss would send the most demeaning email possible and question everything about you before you walked into the office. Like, what kind of tone does that set when you walk into the office? So there can be, your workplace relationships can also be abusive. So yes, it's not just limited to your romantic relationship.
Got it.
Friends can be abusive too. You know, it's like, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, I can think of, even if someone's just kind of guilt tripping you into giving them money, and because they know that you're not strong enough to say no, so they constantly find a way to get something from you. So it sounds like that would also fall under this umbrella.
If it's continued, yeah. You know, I don't want people to throw it around lightly, because when people throw it out around lightly, then it's the girl who cried wolf. But it is just that continued pattern.
Got it. So what steps did you take to kind of get out of that situation and start rebuilding? And actually, yeah, we can just start with that part.
So to get out of the situation, I acknowledged. That was the first thing, is I had to acknowledge that, hey, you haven't looked at your credit report in about 4 years, and you need to see what's on there, and just face it. Because I think a lot of people, when I always liken the first time you look at your credit report or your financial situation, it's like walking into a room and all of your bad decisions are just looking at you. They're like, you did that, you did that, you messed up on this. And that takes a lot of courage. And I commend anybody who has done that, you know, just to face their financial, their poor decisions from the past and start to untangle them. And so I started with my credit score, because credit is one of those things that I was taught to focus on growing up. So I started with my credit score, and eventually improved my credit score by 130 points in 18 months. So that was my Fab Finance's initial, like, that's what I focused on, was helping people with their credit. And then I started to significantly build my savings. And then I also started to begin to tackle my debt and increase my investment portfolio. So it's been steps. And that's another thing, is that a lot of people don't realize that it's a step. It's a process. You know, it's not like you're going to go improve your credit score, demolish your debt, increase your savings, and start investing all in that same month, or even all in that same year. You have to decide what your financial goals are. For me, it was getting an apartment on my own. And so my actions fell in line with what my financial goals were at that time.
Got it.
And I was going to plug here, I had to get in front of me for the folks who haven't been, annualcreditreport.com. I'll put this in the show notes, but that's your free annual credit report from all three bureaus, guaranteed by federal law. So we've talked about that a few times. So no more excuses. That is going to make the action item. So you will see that coming. So don't try to dodge it. Might as well get ahead of it.
So just a little item to add to that. So because I'm doing a course, I'm about to teach a course on, actually, I'm working on the notes and everything, called credit etiquette. But did you know that it was only in 2003 that we were granted access to our credit reports annually?
No.
That it became a legal right only in 2003. And so that's another thing, is that this concept of credit is relatively new. It wasn't until the 1960s that we actually started to have, we're able to have access to the information on our credit report. And in 2003, it only became a federal right that we could get it every year. And so that's another thing about teaching credit and understanding credit, and people who were raised by their grandparents and seniors, like, that's information they didn't live in, that reality. Mm-hmm. And so this concept is relatively new to the baby boomers and Generation X and millennials. I think we're the first generation that has actually grown up with the entitlement and understanding of how credit affects our lives.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you that. What's your experience? Because I think we see ourselves as a millennial right there on the, I'm like an apologetic millennial, but it is what it is. I think we see ourselves as entitled to information, but I'm still surprised how little folks know about credit. Are you seeing different?
No, when I say entitled, it is entitled to information.
Okay.
It is totally the entitlement to information, because a lot of people still don't know a lot about credit and credit scores. I think because I live in that space, sometimes I'm like, really? You don't know that? But there are a lot of people who are not aware of basic information as it pertains to their credit score. And there are the people who think or question, you know, I pay my bills on time every month. Why is my credit score not improving? It's because, well, your cards are maxed out every month too. You're just paying it off to max them out again. And so, yeah, there are a lot of people who don't understand it still.
Now, how long would you say that it probably took you to get to a good place financially post that relationship? So you talked about some of the things you did, and but how long do you think it took you to get to a point where you were like, okay, I'm good?
I mean, I still have financial goals right now, you know, in building a business. So I have to be kind to myself and say, yeah, Tanya, you are good, but I'm not as good as I want to be.
If you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free, 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 free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out.
Right now. But I would say I started in 2013. By mid 2014, I was like, okay, you're doing a good job here. By mid 2014, because that's when I started saving and that's when I started aggressively investing after my credit profile had improved. And I felt like I had a good understanding of what I needed to do to change my financial situation and actually become financially free and freer in life in general. So I would say it took me about a year and a half.
Got it.
Rich, let me ask a quick question. I think it's a quick question. Do you buy into, because I think you emphasize, and I think it's very important, the budgetary allocation? Like, do you have a 50, 30, 60, 20, or 70? I mean, I think there's three main ones, but is there one that you say is a starting point?
No, I didn't buy into that because of the type of person that I am. I think that it works for some, and I think for others, it doesn't work for them. My main goal is to just go ahead and automatically save 20% of what I bring in and then do right with my money otherwise. So I guess I do buy into the 80-20%. And that is 80%, just saving 20%, especially now as an entrepreneur. Things were significantly different when I had a 9-to-5. But as an entrepreneur and as I'm building businesses, I have to be more realistic about what I need my money to do for me and the different ways that I'm investing my money. So I've paused my contributions to my mutual fund, my monthly contributions to my IRAs and everything. I paused that because I view this as investing in my finance and the growth of the related entities. But I do make sure that I save 20% of any money that comes in.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. So folks, we'll expand on that a little bit on another show, but just to give a little bit of context there, at least the top budget is 50% is basically living expenses, 30% would be entertainment, so it gives you a little bit more flexibility, and 20% pretty much in all the budgets is always to savings or debt payments. So you're doing something to basically improve your financial goals. But what I think is important here, and I think to the point which I think we're seeing thematic and across a number of shows, is you got to know your purpose. You know, no budget, no credit, no financial goal, no plan will be, in my opinion, sustainable if you don't know why you're doing it. And that allows for that flexibility for it to be, because you're going to be cyclical. Like, for me, and Rich knows, and I think I talked about on another show, like, I was facing a layoff. Like, that's something, at least I didn't plan for. I had to move across the country, and I did not have the means to move across the country because that's something I wasn't planning for. And all the positive planning and all the changes and things that I've done over the year were helpful, but for not, because that's just life. Like, you can't plan for, oh, I might lose my job in 3 months. Now I got to fix this. Mm-hmm. So, but if you have a purpose, you have a vision, you have a mission, you can go back to, okay, you know, what am I doing here? And how do I get back to alignment as quick as possible? Equilibrium.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to also add in that, you know, a lot of times people are just unsure of what they want to do or like what they need to do with their money, or they think that they have these financial goals that aren't really their goals. And one of the things I found is that when you're living someone else's financial goals, you're not as committed. But when you're living financial goals and you add that personal connection with, okay, well, my goal is to do this. My goal is to do this. My goal is to, like, so when I decided I was going to leave my job, there is nothing anyone could have told me to get me to spend my money any other way, because it was my financial goal and Tanya was committed to leaving her job.
Damn,
and I knew
right.
that I needed to put that money aside. But if it was something else, you know, that, you know, someone else is like, well, you know, like my parents, they want me to buy a house. That is their big thing. They want me to buy a house, but I don't feel that my life lends to purchasing a home right now. I'm just not at that place. And I'm not going to be as dedicated to saving for a down payment on a home, because that's not really what I want to do with my money. So you really have to decide what your financial goals are and what your goals are.
So I don't know if this still applies, but I was going to drop a yes here. So I'll allow y'all to continue.
Hand raised. We had well, we had Lisa Nicole Bell on last week. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her, and she had us, like, she had us praise dancing in our chairs. It was pretty awesome. And so I'm getting that same feeling here. Like, yes, tell the people. Now, a question, and this is actually jumping a little bit back to the business side of things, because you mentioned MyFab Finance, and of course there's kind of making that transition to doing your own thing, and you've like, for all intents and purposes, you've blown up. Like that's just the amount of things that are out there about you, positive things, and some of them I mentioned in the intro. But of course, there's a lot of work to get there, and there are things that you need to do to invest in yourself to be able to accelerate that process. So what were some of those investments for you? What were some of those things that you spent money on that you felt you needed to do to really kind of get your business to the next level?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. there's so much, and there's so many things that I'm learning down. But one of the most important things is learning what I'm not good at and bringing on people to help me with that. So bringing in an editor, because me, I'm just like, I wrote it. That's hot fire. Let me post it. Let it go. But I actually had to bring an editor in to make sure that I was putting things, to look over my work. I had to bring an assistant on. That's another investment I've made in my business, is realizing that I cannot do everything, and that's okay. Doesn't make me any less talented. I just need someone to support me administratively. So bringing on that, I consider that to be an investment. Also, I did hire a transition coach. I hired someone to help me during that transition from my 9-to-5 to working for myself full time, because I was born to two parents who had a very stable situation, and entrepreneurship was not something that we talked about in life. So I needed someone to actually coach me on entrepreneurship and what to expect and how to become comfortable charging what I was worth and just navigating that first year of entrepreneurship. I've invested in several courses. I mean, even investing in getting my certification as a certified financial education instructor, because I didn't need that certification necessarily to teach financial literacy. Like, I walked through those trenches. I know what I'm talking about. But in the same sense, I just realized that someone with two social service degrees, that would serve me better as well. Mm-hmm. And I did learn a lot from that experience too. Most recently, the biggest investment that I have made is intentionally investing my time in my spirituality. And I think that I don't think that enough entrepreneurs realize how important it is, especially people who were raised with a strong spiritual base or have a spiritual core, because you can't neglect that as you're building a business. Even this morning, I dedicated the first hour of my business to meditating and focusing on revisiting the sermons from the spiritual center I go to, and just really strengthening my core and my relationship with myself. Because as an entrepreneur, if you do not have a strong relationship with yourself and a strong understanding of what you are able to do, it is so much more challenging. And you will find yourself questioning yourself at each and every turn. So you have to have that confidence, and investing in my spirituality has allowed me to do that. So hasn't cost me the most money. It cost me time, but time is money. And if you're not spending your time on the proper things that serve and nourish you, then it's going to reflect in your ultimate balance, you know, your balances. So,
you know what's insane? Just yesterday evening, Boobookin. So I refer to my fiance as Boobookins on the show. Boobookins and I were actually talking about going to a church or finding a church out here, because she was saying it's the longest period that she's been without kind of actively being involved on the spiritual side. And it's also been the longest period for myself. And just yesterday, we got a thing in the mail about a spiritual center that looks like it's for younger folks and has one of those more open approaches. And then just this morning before this show, I was meditating. And that's one thing that I've gotten back into over the past few weeks. And it is amazing just how much it helps me to calm down when I'm feeling anxious. You know, if I'm doubting myself or if I'm having negative thoughts, to be able to sit and get centered and then dive into whatever it is that I'm going to be working on. It just gives me a much better attitude and approach overall.
Yes. And it's entrepreneurship is hard. I will not, you know, I don't want to say it's hard. Entrepreneurship has, I'm being very mindful of the way that I phrase this because I don't want to sit in the problem, but it will bring up things for you that are unexpected and that might challenge you. And it's so important to have a clearly defined or a understanding of how you will address those. It's so important because you will question yourself. As I say, you will question yourself. You will question if you were cut out for this. You know, last month I had my most profitable month to date. And then this month I'm like, man, am I really cut out for this? You know, it's just, it really is, you know, a roller coaster of emotions, and you have to have that spiritual core. And there are some people who just aren't spiritual. I won't even say the spiritual core, but you have to be able to calm your mind down and be able, Russell Simmons has a book called Success Through Stillness, I believe that's the title of it. And you have to be able to calm your mind down and be still, because that is where your best ideas and your thoughts and your processes and your connectivity with your purpose comes from.
Yeah, I think y'all are both also hitting on a topic, which I'm going to quote you back on, is, you know, so much I'm learning. And I think people, including, you know, present company, because Rich and I have had some conversations online and offline where we're like, man, we just got to wait till we know everything and then we'll be ready to move forward. Thus we never move. So I think, you know, emphasizing again for folks that you have to know something, but you don't have to know everything, and finding that sweet spot between taking the next step. I mean, it's easier said than done. But if you wait, I'm saying the start to the journey is the start.
Yes, I will tell you, there are so many more. I am very honest about my capability and my intellectual capability and everything. And I know that there are people out there who are smarter than me. But when it comes to my work ethic and my willingness to just get it done, they're not outdoing me in that aspect. And a lot of times that's what matters. It's not about knowing everything. It's just getting started and learning on the way up.
Nice. Yeah, that idea of actually getting things done. I was going to say implementation, which feels very corporate. I'm like still in work mode, so I'm thinking in like corporate terms and like we got to whiteboard this and stuff. But that ability to actually get things done. And I was actually thinking even earlier this morning, I'm like, you know, I've spent a lot of years thinking about things, waiting for the right time, waiting for everything to be aligned, and it's just never going to happen. You know, you just really have to start taking that consistent action. And, you know, even looking around the space, and I think part of what's actually like fired me up, and it's no shots or shade, is I see people who are giving advice on topics that I know really well, or doing things that I know I could do 10 times better. And I'm kind of like, yo, if this person is doing this and they're caking off of this, the only difference between them and me is that they took action and I kept waffling and noodling about what I want to be doing. And you know, it's helped give me that laser focus to be like, all right, what do I want my life to look like in 2 years? I didn't even go 5 years. I just went 2 years out. And I was like, you know, what do I want my life to look like in 2 years? And I kind of envisioned that stuff. And ever since I've done that, I've been laser focused on where I'm trying to go. I'm like, yo, I got 2 years to get there, because 1 year would have just had me stressed out. Like I know the life that I want. I'm not going to create in 1 year's time. But in 2 years, like, all right, I know where I want to be at that point. What do I need to do between now and then? And it's even helped with time management, you know, because I'm like, all right, I know I need to get up earlier. I know I got to start doing this because I feel like I know where I'm going.
You got to get out your way. You have to get out your way. Like you just have to.
I'm pretty sure this is like an internet meme that has been misquoted, because I went to see, I was like, when you said that, I think that's a quote, and it says, hard work beats talent when talent fails to work hard. Kevin Durant. I'm pretty sure somebody else said that.
You sure you got that from someone else?
But I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to let Kevin work. So yeah, I think that tied in here.
It's true though. It's listen, when Black Enterprise happened, there are quite a few people who are probably like, really? Like, really? I mean, she's only been doing this for 2 years and so. But that's another thing, is that, you have to realize that everybody's opportunities aren't your own. And some people have opportunities that are available to them that won't be available to you, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And it comes to running your race. And,
Definitely.
It just comes down to really running your race and not comparing your journey to anyone else's and doing the best on your journey, knowing that you gave your best.
Yeah, Lisa said something that I think we've been doing, didn't realize we were doing, but toiling and obscurity. I literally wrote it down. I'm looking at it right now. Because people think when they know you is when you got known. Like, he just showed up 15 minutes of fame. I'm like, do you know how long, how many overtime, how many hours, how many podcasts? as Rich was saying, like, I used to blog, so I'm going, you know, I'm about to show off in this email. It's like just getting that arrival point, just because you got to know us or you or whomever, doesn't mean that the work hasn't been put in there. So yeah, that kind of rubs me the wrong way. People are like, they just started. I'm like, you don't know this person's journey or what they've been
through. You don't know their journey. It's like, you know, my Fat Finance started back in 2007 when I was fighting for my life, you know? So you never know someone's journey. You never do. And that's important just to, I hope that someone finds comfort in that who is currently comparing their journey to another person's, because you just never know theirs.
Yeah, I want to apologize. I think I heard you clapping. I didn't mean to rile you up. I know it's.
I've been in Brooklyn for 8 years.
I'm like, subscribe
from the point. I'm so sorry.
Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, so you mentioned Black Enterprise and what happened with that. So what did happen with it? Because there are some people who may not be familiar with what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. So My Fat Finance started in January 2013 and October 2014. I was on the cover of Black Enterprise. It was a new face of wealth building and was a feature story about my financial journey. And so it great opportunity. Fantastic. I never in a million years did I think that I would have been on a magazine cover, particularly a cover that I used as a child or a publication that was had frequent appearances on my vision board. I was always cutting stuff off of Black Enterprise and putting it on my vision board when I was a kid. And so it was a wonderful opportunity. And I think it was also a pivotal moment for me, because that's how I was like, oh, this is moving for you. Who are you not to take advantage of this? And who are you not to to build on this? So it was a pivotal moment for me too. I was kind of like, no backing out, Tanya, you in. You're in this thing. And as a Gemini, I don't know if either you are Geminis or know any Geminis, but
I do, but I'm not going to talk about them.
We can be kind of like, oh, I'm doing this month, and you know, next month I'm going to have a bakery, and then the next month I'm a horticultural specialist, and you know what? Now I'm riding bikes, you know, because I'm competing in marathons and the triathlons and training. So that can be very much part of the Gemini experience, and that was the moment where I said, okay, I need to buckle down on this. This is my purpose.
You know, and I was going to ask you if that was your mama, I made it moment.
No, I was still working full time when that happened.
Oh.
I still had a full time job when that happened, even though I made sure I kept that cover next to my desk. So anytime anybody had to come and talk to me, they had to look at that cover. But I still had a full time job. My mama, I made it moment. I don't know if that's, I guess, I don't know.
Yeah.
It comes in increments. Even before this call, I had a call with my mom, and she's doing this charity sale she does every year for her nonprofit organization she does work with. And, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and everything. So that first year, things are kind of shaky. And, you know, Christmas, nobody was having Christmas that first year. And it was a little shaky. And today I was talking to her. I was like, well, you know, I'll go ahead and buy a few tickets from you. And even that, just to say, like, I'm an entrepreneur and I'm following my path, and you guys didn't understand what and why I was doing it, but I can support you because I've built it up to where I can support myself and others around me, was a big moment for me. It was like, wow, I'm able to contribute to a cause she cares about while living the life that I want to live and doing what I want to do for a living. So I think it comes to small moments. The Toyota commercial definitely was big.
Yeah.
To have a national commercial, that was pretty big too. But my parents are just really supportive, and even me and my sister, everything that we do is pretty awesome to them. So in my mom's opinion, I made it because I'm defining life on my own terms, and that's something that she wasn't able to do as a person employed with the U.S. military.
Yeah.
Do you have, I mean, on a scale of zero to Usain Bolt, mom, like, where do your parents fall on the praise scale? Because when he won the Olympics, she was like, but he's not married. So like, where do they fall on the, yeah, she made it, or I wish she'd go back to the 9-to-5?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I got my master's degree, my dad was kind of like, okay, but you need to get your doctorate, though. So they're in
between. The struggle is real.
They're in between. They are in between. But they do let me and my sister know they're proud of us, and they do praise us. I think my parents are – so when I started the eargasm, and I was like, I'm going to move to New York and do this full time, my parents were like, you lost your mind. Like, this is not a good idea. We are so concerned for you. With MyFab Finance, when I called my mom and told her I was going to do it full time, because MyFab, before I left my job, MyFab Finance had 4 revenue streams. Before I left my job, I had worked with Russell Simmons. Before I left my job, I had a magazine cover. I had proven that this was a viable business, and that I was going to take advantage of any opportunities given to me. So when I called her and told her I was going to do this full time, she said, do it. She's like, do it. Like, you'll be okay. I have complete faith in you. So my parents are—they're really supportive. Her thing now is grandchildren. Yeah. That's her thing.
Like, yeah. You know what? I was thinking it. I wasn't going to ask because earlier when you were talking about the wedding and talking about them wanting you to get a house, and I was like, and they probably want you to have some kids too.
Well, she's going so hard, so hard at the wedding, at the actual wedding. During her toast, she said, like, and now you can have grandbabies.
And I'm guessing she looked you both dead in your optic stems.
Dead on. And like when I call her, I know I can hear the anticipation on the other side of the phone. Like, is she going to tell me she's pregnant? Is she going to tell me something? Like, I can just feel it. And then when I say something, she's like, oh, well, you know, she's let down. She's so ready. She's so ready. But I do things on my time and I'm not ready. So that's not what's going to happen right now.
And, you know, I bring that up jokingly, but I think it's important, especially, and I didn't have an appreciation for this, but a lot of listeners are reaching out to us saying they were first generation. You know, parents' job is to worry. So, and to be typically conservative, because my parents, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna write a book, I'm gonna start a blog. They're like, what is a blog? You know, can I Google it? You know, like, they're like terrified, but they haven't seen it. You know, it's sort of like you're introducing the iPhone to your parents, like, they don't know what it is until you put it in front of them. So, and I'd say that's not limited to parents, friends, family, and other. Sometimes I'm like, I'm going to do this. Like, I tell folks now, I tell Rich, I don't even bring up podcasts anymore. Like, half my, probably 75% of my friends don't even know what a podcast is. I'm like, I do a show that's like radio. They're like, oh, that sounds cool. I say, yeah, I do a podcast. They're like, what's a podcast? Is it spelled with a P? Is the etch silent? I'm like, you know, get all derailed. So, but, you know, again, going back to folks, define your journey and then show people, you know, your journey will demonstrate the path. You will prove
show and prove
action.
Definitely.
Yeah. Show and prove.
Definitely. So we're going into the last stretch here. Just have a couple more questions for you. Definitely want to be respectful of your time. So I guess my last question, then I'll let Marcus go. I guess what's what's the biggest difference between the way you managed money before having your business versus the way you manage money now? So has there been a change in the mindset in terms of how you manage your money pre having a business versus being in the thick of it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I am much more responsible. Even though I would put my money aside in savings and so forth, I have people that I pay on a monthly basis, for one. So I'm a lot more, I have added layers of accountability because they have to get paid. And then my bills still have to get paid. But I question everything now. I question every purchase because I know that in any given month, like, 1 month can be really awesome and the next month might not. And so I get my subscription services set up. So I'm a lot more conservative in my spending too. I question how much or what the place of something really is in my life is. I question return. Like, what is the return going to be on this? And is it worth the investment? And I'm a lot more organized. I am a lot more organized because I paid myself a salary and I'm responsible for taxes and everything. So because it's not getting done for me, I'm a lot more in touch with my money and just a lot more organized as well.
Got it. Dope.
Nice. So mine is, and you might have to take a little, unless you know off top, you might have to take a while to think about it, and that's fine. If you were limited to one piece of advice, quote, sentence of financial advice that you would share with the people, what would it be?
One.
Just one.
I'll allow two if it makes it easier.
Well, yeah, because I have my life mantras. I feel like life and money mantras can be slightly different. But I guess this one can be combined, and it comes from The Alchemist, one of the books I credit with changing my life dramatically. And it is, when you want something bad enough, the entire universe conspires to help you achieve it. That comes along with your financial situation, because I feel like a lot of people like kind of want financial freedom, but they don't believe it's available to them. And that comes with living the life that you believe that you deserve. A lot of people kind of want it, but they're so afraid of actually having it, and you don't even subconsciously, they're afraid of it. So when you want something bad enough, the universe conspires to help you achieve it. Everything will line up. That comes down to the type of jobs or the income earning opportunities you have, situations that might force you to be more financially responsible, and just your overall quality of life.
You know, it's funny because I've always thought that the forces conspire against me, and I realize I probably...
Are you serious?
Well, you know, it's funny, like even yesterday when Twitter was down, and then I was trying to access some other website, and I'm like, yo, I'm just trying to be great, but I feel like the forces are conspiring against me. But I guess I probably just need to flip that around and think about it the more positive way.
The forces do what you tell them to do.
Yeah, so I basically,
like, that's how energy works.
Yeah, which would probably explain why things continue to get worse after I made that proclamation into the atmosphere.
That's why when it rains, it pours. That is why there's that sentiment, when it rains, it pours. And like, when you bring yourself, you guys retweeted it, but when you bring yourself out of the vibration of the problem and focus on the solution, it dramatically changes. Like, there have been times where I'm like, this day is going horrible. Let me just stop and start smiling. Let me just simple act of stopping, like focusing on everything that's going wrong, and just smile and focus on everything that goes right. And things begin to shift. It's like avalanche. You can either go downhill or you can go uphill.
Definitely. So Tanya, it's been awesome to have you on the podcast, but before telling people where to find you, I wanted to see if there's any projects or things that you have coming out that people should maybe look into if they're trying to get their life together.
So one of the amazing things I have is the Banish the Balance Challenge. It's probably one of the best things that I've done to date with MyFabFinance. I'm very happy about it. It is a free debt elimination course that I created. It started out as an 8-week challenge. Now it's been pared down to a seven-day self-guided course. But we helped over 4,000 people pay off $235,000 worth of debt over the summer. And we're continuing to do that work. And so if anyone has any debt that they would like to tackle and they need a supportive group to help them with that, you can go to banishthebalance.com. It's banishthebalance.com, or just look up hashtag Banish the Balance Challenge. You can also find it on my Start Here page on MyFabFinance, and the homepage is the Start Here page. So you can find it on there if you need support in paying off debt. And then I'm working on my credit etiquette course, because credit is something I reflected back to over and over again in this particular interview, is something that I was raised with respect for when I started my journey. It's what I started with. And I improved my credit score by myself because I was too cheap to pay anybody else. And I'm creating a course to help people do the same thing, because you don't have to pay an expert to improve your credit. Right. So it's a course that provides you with all the tools, materials, and resources needed. And you also have access to me in the private Facebook group that comes along with it. So that will be coming up soon, probably by the time this podcast airs. So you can find out more about that on myfabfinance.com too.
Dope, nice. Dope. And how many, during that 18-month stretch, I know there was one that you've talked about in the past, how much did you increase your credit score by?
130 points.
Boom.
So, yeah.
Yeah, y'all need to be up in there.
I went from the 500s to the 700s. Yeah, it was pretty like, whoa. Oh, okay. Girl, you got good credit. Amen. So it was a good, you know, and that's another thing. I know we have to go, but that is another thing, that it's dealing with your financial success. So once you have good credit, how do you deal with the continued solicitations for you to take out credit cards? Because now everybody wants to rock with you because you've proven that you're financially responsible. But you can it's very easy to find yourself back in a hole if you take advantage of all the financial opportunities that are being presented to you as a result of your newfound success.
That sounds like a 30 for 30 special.
You know, I'm working on something. I'm working on something. I can't talk about it, but it's 30 for 30-ish.
See, there it is. There it is. Great minds. Great minds. So, Tanya, again, it's been awesome having you on the show. You dropped your URL, but where can people find you on social?
I am uniformly branded as MyFabFinance on all social media channels. So look up MyFabFinance anywhere and you'll find me.
Awesome.
Hashtag smart.
There we go. So again, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great having you on. I'm sure the people will get all sorts of insight and knowledge from this. And And if you're listening to the podcast, of course, thanks to you for listening as well. If you have topics you'd like to hear us cover on the show, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com or hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, @paybalances.
And don't forget to join our email list where we share top articles to read throughout the week, work and money tips, and more. Sign up by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email.
There it is. There it is. So it's been exquisite, delightful, real, a bunch of other positive words. The forces are conspiring to help me be great. I am now implementing that in my life today. Thank you very much, Tanya.
You're very welcome. Thank you guys for having me. It's been a long time in the works.
I know. And like that's like half my fault, but I won't allow the people to hear more about that.
Everything happens as it should. Okay.
There we go. So until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.